Anything combat with Johnny K.
It's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, wherein we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today we're joined by a guest who's already been on the show. He's the Soul Assassin, Bellator Kickboxing Champion, WBC Muay Thai Champ in welterweight and lightweight, defended both of those belts, FIDAM Champ, USMF Champ, Lion Fight Champ, World Muay Thai Council Champ, Muay Thai kickboxing legend. Please welcome to the show, Kevin Ross. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks again for having me.
Since the last time we spoke, what have you been working on?
A lot of little things. I'm doing, back to my own training and feeling good and consistent again with all that after some time off. Back to training people full time, working at the gym a lot, working on myself a lot. No major projects, just a lot of little ones constantly, you know.
Let's talk about Eddie's last performance. I liked him when he gets going. When he gets going, he's very accurate and he's always unconventional, but I think it is that when he's unconventional, it looks very natural for him, and it's such a nice flow of, it's a flow state that he does. I love it, right? So then he was fighting Luke Lessie, and the problem I saw with this fight was that Luke was just really, really long. So, and he kind of just stayed behind the teep and the jab that was causing a lot of issues. So what did you think about this fight?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I thought it was an amazing fight, you know, from both, which was so great to see. You know, it's like, yeah, of course I want Eddie to win. He's my boy. But what I want is there to be great performances, people that are pushing the sport, people that are picking up where I and so many others left off, you know, because at the end of the day, it's about progressing the sport as a whole. You know, we all want to win individually, but the more we can push this whole thing together and make it better for the next generation, the generation after that, and at us all as a community, the better it is. So I think sometimes we lose sight of that because our ego gets in the way, and, you know, we all want to look good and feel good and be good. But the greater picture, I think, is more important. And I talked to Eddie last night, and you know, of course, at first it's hard to deal with a loss, particularly a close loss like that, particularly when you feel you won. I felt it could have gone either way. I did have Eddie edging it out a bit, but I only watched it once, so I'd have to go back again. But I do think it's one of those fights where you can't really complain either way. You know, it was such a good fight, so technical, so close, so many good back and forths, and they just really put on a great show and showed the level of Muay Thai here in America, which, you know, hasn't been great for the longest of time up until recent years, you know. So it was so cool to see, you know. I'm just so proud of both of them to put on that show and have such grace and heart behind it. No egos, and just this is what we do, and this is the result of it.
I think I saw some training of Eddie and Luke back in the day. So have you worked with Lessie by any chance?
No, I've never worked with him. I'd been following his career for quite some time. I just always thought he's so unique, just like Eddie is. You know, they bring their own very different styles to what people think of as Muay Thai, which is what I love. I love to see people that can express who they are in there and don't try to fit themselves into a certain mold because of how they think some people might view it, you know, and like thinking you have to fight a Muay Thai way. There's a way we think, but even that is uneducated, because when you really look at Muay Thai, look at the greats, look how stylistically different they all were. Over the years, people have kind of lost a lot of that art, I believe, even though there's people that still hone that in a lot. But back in like the golden era, which was the 90s, everyone was very, very unique. Very unique. Nobody fought alike. You couldn't put two people together and say these guys are the same. Even people from the same camps were very unique, which is what I love, which is what I love to see. So when that true artistry comes out in fighters, it's what I love. I love to see it. So it was very cool to see both of them doing that and helping both of their games. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they have in the future.
Do you think that is a new thing, that now that MMA and Muay Thai are so popular that the styles are getting less unique? There's a lot of coaches that are pigeonholing their fighters because there's a lot of camps where they do fight very similar, and it's kind of up to the individual to kind of refuse and kind of do what they do, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say with MMA particularly, it has gotten really bad. It's just become so much more of a business than an art now. So you have people fighting a certain way, wanting to look a certain way, wanting to talk a certain way. Same thing that happened in boxing. You know, it's great that things get bigger and better and people are able to make more money, but you also lose a lot of the soul of what the art is, what we all fell in love with in the beginning. And being able to maintain that with your progression and growth of something, particularly when you have people that are more concerned with the financial aspect of it than growing it and staying true to the form. But who's to say what that is and how to do that? That's why it's great to see so many different individuals taking it in different ways and applying their own style. And when you see unique people, you can't help but watch and enjoy it, because they're just being themselves. They're so authentic, you know.
You've been doing coaching recently, like you told me before. What do you think you're learning now? Like, you've been in the game for so long, what do you think in your game that you want to learn or that you can learn? And is that even a thing that you can do? Can you learn more than what you already know?
You can always learn more than you know. There's no end to anything until you're done breathing. So even just maintaining a level requires you to push that level, or else you're declining. So yeah, it's important to be evolving, yet always stay yourself. I think a lot of times when things are evolving, we get stuck in wanting to be a part of this thing that's moving along, you know, and then we start to conform to its ideas and its styles and things like that. So it's hard to stay yourself while you're trying to grow, you know. But yeah, in the coaching realm, it's the same thing. The truly great coaches are the ones that keep pushing themselves, just like a fighter has to do to continually progress. Very rarely is it just somebody's talent. It's whether they're going to keep pushing themselves or not. That's the biggest factor in whether or not people are successful. Is, are you willing to keep pushing yourself? Are you willing to keep grinding no matter how good or bad it looks on the outside? Do you really want to do this? And then you just got to keep going no matter what happens. And those are the people that make it in the end. And that's something I was able to see firsthand coming up in fighting, because so many super talented people. Talented isn't that unique. It's people that do something with that talent that is very, very unique. And most of the time, it isn't the talent that got them there. It's the hard work, pushing themselves, making up for the areas they lacked. I mean, that's what I had to do. I wasn't particularly talented as far as being a fighter. You know, I had certain things that helped, but I had so many factors I had to make up for, but I knew what they were, and I was very aware of what they were. So I was able to counteract that and develop in areas where people do have certain strengths, like talent, don't tend to develop because they get away with a lot of that talent for so long. You know, and you see that a lot in the beginning, because the talented people are the ones that just go out the gate and look like they've been doing it forever, and they're winning and winning and winning, where the people that are getting a lot of losses, having a lot of bad days, you know, that they typically fall off really quick, or you see how badly they want to do this, and they just keep grinding, and that hard work will outlast any talent ever will. So, yeah, I don't know. I got lost there on a tangent.
That's all right. I've got good news for you, though. I have been doing way more training, and my right kick is feeling good, but I do have to say my left kick, because I keep on switching stance. Every time I say this, because I'm a novice, I'm a beginner, people lose it at me. They go, don't switch stance. Learn one stance and then go to the next one, right? I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to learn switch stance and try and get good in both of them, because that's how my brain works. My brain doesn't work in rigid patterns. Like, when I looked at all these fighters, looked at all this UFC content, the whole thing that stood out to me was combination punching while switching stance, two, and then you switch into the next stance, two, or same side attacks. You know, you throw a three, but you throw the lead head kick. You know what I mean? Like, really awkward shit is what I enjoy doing. So I want to ask you, with the left kick from southpaw, how do I open up my hips more? Because I've been doing hips or reps that open it up. The right is open, I'm flexible. The left is immobile. I can't even open it.
Well, everyone's got something to deal with, so you just gotta find out ways around it. You know, the angles you kick at, the distances you kick at, the rotation and the force, and all these factors can be tweaked. You know, you can kick differently depending on your body type. It's just learning how to use the most effectively, right? Like, we're all built different. We're all going to have different things that we can and can't get away with, but there's always ways to work around it and to develop. And some people just have things they can't do or can't do well. So
don't say that to me.
You can always do it better. All right, I'll say that you can always do it better, and you can always tighten stuff up and be more technical with it. And then as far as how far you take that, I mean, that's on you. It's just a matter of time and how long it takes is all that it really is. It's not to say you can't do it. It's how long is it going to take you?
I want to ask you about a particular combination. So Dan Henderson in MMA used to do this. And it's if you're an orthodox, you do your left lead kick to the thigh or to the calf or whatever, to the leg, which sets up your overhand or your tomb, right? And I did see this in Eddie's last fight, that he kind of kept on seeing that he was long. He kept on doing the lead kick to the leg of Lessi, and then from there he found his range. And I felt like every single time he did that, he landed the punches more accurately. And every single time it either missed or the step wasn't there, it was out of range. So can you explain that concept to me?
Yeah, you're basically, what you're doing is you're putting out feelers. You have this distance that we're trying to figure out, this dead space in between you and your opponent. And it's just a matter of who can figure out that space first, that is going to be able to maximize their efficiency. So we tend to sit back so far, shut down defensively, but then we have this giant gap to clear before we make that impact. And we're really just hoping and guessing from there. But the longer out you can maintain that guard and play around in that dead space, you're able to dial in that information more. You're able to read them more, you're able to feel them more. And that's why your follow-up shots will happen. That's why people traditionally, it's like work behind the jab, because the jab, you can stay a little bit safer. You're not committing so much to it. You can throw it out there. You can start to gauge that range a little bit better. And then your follow-up is going to be there. The problem being, most people don't develop those fundamental skills anymore. It's like a lost art doing that. Everything's just like throwing heavy, moving a lot, changing your stance a lot. Whatever it is, but we've lost a lot of those fundamentals. And when you can do that, particularly when you can do it with multiple things, not just the lead hand, but the lead leg, the opposite side as well, being able to throw those for distance management as well as power and speed. You know, there's so many things you can do with strikes as opposed to just hitting. And once you start to figure that out, I mean, that you really start to see how deep this game goes and how the levels keep moving up. Like, it never ends. So to see that, and when people are able to apply that, particularly in a fight, it's great. It's great to watch.
Do you think that you will be remembered for the golden era of Muay Thai in America?
I would assume so. I don't know. I think when people think about Muay Thai in America and when it started really progressing and getting in the spotlight and fighting higher level people more consistently, that is the era that I was in. You know, that and me and the Can't Stop Crazy crew, we were really the ones leading the way. And prior to that, of course, there was people that did it, just not as consistently and not as many people together all at once, all at the same, in the same generation of time. I'm just grateful to be a part of it. And I'm grateful that I was aware of how special it was in the moment. I didn't have to wait till I was done to look back and be like, oh damn, that was the shit back then. Right. I knew what it was then. I knew what it was coming up. I knew what it was my entire career because of how late I had started and the reason that I never thought I was even going to be able to do this and everything that I had to overcome, all that. So for me, the first day up until the last day was always appreciation and getting the most I could out of each and every moment and every day. And that's why I was able to progress the way that I was, because I put so much of myself into it and I refused to quit or back down or slow down.
How did you stay present in being grateful and displaying gratitude through your training and through your performances? How did you stay present in the moment every day?
A big one is knowing that I'm not supposed to be alive, and I was triggered. I was supposed to be dead by 20. So that certainly helps a lot. What also like reminds you of that is all the injuries that I've had. Just like really, really, really bad injuries, and just being grateful to have a healthy hand, two healthy hands, you know, healthy legs. And that was always a continual reminder of every day you have is a good day, even when things aren't going well, because they can be a hell of a lot worse. And it's just a matter of, what are you going to do with this? And I think about all the people who wish they could do this or can't do this because of illnesses or death or all these other factors, you know. So that was never lost on me, and that's something I've been able to maintain throughout. You know, it's obviously it's something you have to practice. You don't just have gratitude just because. You're like, yeah, everybody knows things could be worse, but everybody also knows things could be better, right? So where do you find that balance and where do you draw that line? But I think the more that we can appreciate the moment that we're in, the moment that we have, the better it'll be.
Have you gotten any assistance through some sort of spiritual realm, do you think, by any chance?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the way I look at that is it's just a matter of what kind of context you want to put it in. So certain people have their religion. Certain people have their God, some people have their whatever other beliefs they may be. And that, I think that's just all our own individual, unique way of looking at the same thing and interpreting it the way that we do. Our realities are so subjective, yet we feel like we're all looking at this objective reality out there and we're just coming to different conclusions. When the reality is each and every one of us experiences everything at our own unique way, from good things to bad things, from life and death to every other thing in life. So I think it's important to not try to put yourself into this box, which can be very limiting and keep you from expanding or exploring or even questioning your own belief systems. So I've always been, I'd say, in that spiritual realm of life, and always very aware of it, you know. But I think my I got away from putting labels on it a long time ago. You know, like I grew up in a certain religion, but the older I got, the more, you know, you start to see all the holes in your belief systems, just like you would with anything else. You know, everyone had all these beliefs in the government and the way the world works until recently, where, you know, I came up kind of thinking that way about things and looking at things that way, that things aren't just this flat surface that doesn't have depth to it, and good things and bad things. Everybody has that. That's why I said there's never a way to do it. There's what way there is for you. What's the best way for you in your own unique life? That's what you got to figure out.
So how has it helped you? One particular have you focused on either during your training or just your life that has helped you, or has it not?
Oh, certainly it helped me. I think it helps get you out of your own head and getting away from that ego-driven mind that we all have. And I think that's a healing thing in anything you're dealing with in life, from trauma or any other factors, is, you know, it allows you to step back from being stuck inside this room inside your head where you think a certain way. And when you can let go of reality, in a sense, for a while, you can start to see things a little more clearly, not take things so personally, or, you know, a lot of these negative emotions because of we can't get out of our own heads. And the problem is you can go too far the other direction and just lose it completely. You know, there's a balance in everything in life. That's why everything has that duality, the good and the bad, the right and the wrong, the left and the right, the light and the dark. You can't have one without the other. We try so hard to think we can free it or paint ourselves in that light where you're a good person or you're a bad person, where everyone's a combination of both, and we're all in this spectrum somewhere. So, yeah, that's how it's helped me.
I'm going to run something by you. So with spiritual fighters, people that have such a deep-seated perception of God or their religion, when they're fighting, they have like this superpower. It might be there, it might not be there, but it's the fact that they believe it's there, therefore it's they've got some string that they can pull on, right? And I always find this complicated because there's fighters that are like, let's say, atheists or agnostic, right? And they're kind of going into the fight with the strength of their own, you know, their own person. Therefore, if they're fighting somebody with their own strength, and the person they're fighting truly believes that God will help them, then I feel like even if it is a perception thing, or even if it is a fallacy, I feel like the person that is the spiritual person is to their betterment, and it's to the detriment of the person that is the atheist in this example, because they are relying on themselves whilst the other person's relying on a higher power. So I want to ask you about that, as well as the fact that, do you think it is better to fight an atheist or someone that believes in God?
I would tell you that the most important thing is belief. You have to have belief, whether that's in an external thing like a God or a religion or a person or a belief in yourself. You have to believe in something to get you through those times of doubt and hurt and failure. That's what gives people strength. Anyone can believe in just about anything and find strength in it, but they have to believe in that thing to give them that extra bit. Believing in yourself, that's the most important thing. Now, you can tie that to an external thing that may or may not be real, but that's all connected in you. You feel yourself is connected to this thing. I believe in this thing, and they are connected to me. But it's all the same belief. You're believing in something greater than yourself, even if it is yourself. It's that greater version of you. I believe in the greatest version of me, and I'm going to be that person regardless of what's happening to me in my life. I'm going to keep pushing to that. I believe in that version of myself. So, as I said, it's really just about belief. a strong belief in something, whatever that is. Now, you take two strong believers, yeah, then it's going to be a flip-up. But yeah, if you have one person that only believes in God, say, and the other person doesn't believe in shit, and just like, I'm a fight. Yeah, I'm gonna take the God guy for sure.
During the fight, I believe you wrote something. I think it's something like live the actual moment and feeling present. So I want to ask you about this. During the fight, a lot of people get distracted. You know what I mean? If you have like 50, 60 fights, of course, at one point you're going to get distracted. So how did you during the fight focus, this is my opponent, this is what I'm doing, and really stay, like zone out the crowd and really stay in the moment every single fight?
Yeah, I was very fortunate in the way that when I started, as I was coming up, I was continually fighting people so much higher above me that I was literally fighting for my life, to where there was no time for thought. You know, I didn't have to deal with that for a really, really long time, but I ended up having to deal with that once I had kind of peaked out and started fighting people at lower levels. Right. I mean, I think, but the point is, once you don't have to have that automatic response anymore, then you realize like, this is a skill you have to develop, because it's not always going to be there organically like that, where somebody else is the factor that, oh, I don't have to think about being in the moment, because I don't have a choice right now, but to be in the moment. But then once you're in there with someone who you can like spar with, basically, you're like, oh shit, I don't like this at all. I fucking hated it. I hated it. And then I just realized there's another level of the game that you have to develop. You know, a lot of people develop this as they're going, but it's easier to fight people at a higher level because you have to elevate your game. It's so much more difficult to fight people at a lower level and maintain your level where it is, or where it can be, without that external factor pushing you. And that is why when you look at the greatest of all time, the greatest fighters of all time, like a Sanchez, like a Mayweather, like whoever you want to put in there, it's the people that can maintain that even when someone isn't at their high level, and they're able to maintain their high level regardless of who's in front of them. And that's a very rare, rare thing in the world. And again, that's when you talk about the greats, the all-time greats. They were able to do that regardless of who was in front of them, regardless of what the situation was. It wasn't just when they needed to push themselves to a higher level. You know what I'm saying? That's really tough to do, to maintain your level when the level's below you.
Do you have an example from your career where you felt like you did this effectively?
No, as I said, I had to learn this really late, right? So my last Stack It Out was my last fight at right that like world class, best in the world level. Then I blew my knee out, right? And so coming back from that, obviously I have to reestablish myself. So technically, these people were ahead of me, even if they're not ahead of me in comparison to where I used to be, right? So I was always pushing my level. But then once I got back to that, and then it got weird and confusing, and I wasn't able to maintain that. And that was something I really had to work on those last couple years of my career. But once I really realized that it was just another factor that you have to develop, I was able to put it in the right context in my brain. It wasn't just, oh, I'm not doing as good as I could, as I should be against people that aren't on that level. You know, then it just clicked in my head one day, and I realized what the situation was and that I needed to start developing that or viewing it in a different way.
When I was sparring at some of these MMA and Muay Thai gyms, they were saying to me that even though they were better, they were still saying that I had really good cardio. And what it was that I go for these runs and I'll do the sprints, which is the top of the triangle. Do you know about the triangle? It's your baseline cardio, and then your middle cardio, and then your top. Do you know about this? Okay. So basically, I'll sprint. So that's the top. But what I've been doing recently is that bottom level cardio. I'll do my runs, but I'll go at a pace that I can hold, nasal breathing for as long as possible. And maybe I might do like 6 or 7K or something, right? And I just want to ask you, seeing that you're like the cardio demon, basically, it is what you specialize in. When you did that baseline of the triangle, the pyramid, the bottom part, and you ran, how long would you run for? And what was your times and what was your kilometers?
So that was something that I never really tracked like that. I never looked at it that way. I don't even know if I ever knew you could look at it that way, in like this scientific light.
It's always the most gifted people in those areas that you ask them and they're like, oh, I just did it. And you're like, fuck, give me the fucking answers.
Well, so I mean, the answer was I continually push my line. Right. It wasn't how long did you run, how fast. It was like I have my maintenance, whatever that is, and then I have my sprint protocol that I would put in. And then, but you also, you're taking in your bag work, your pad work, your sparring. There's all these aspects of cardio conditioning. And when I was able to really learn how to regulate that and not always try to push myself at this peak every single second of every single day, that's how I was able to, I think, fight as long as I did and stay consistent and keep pushing myself, even though you have to learn how to make adjustments physically, mentally, and everything else. Where before, when I was younger, even though I was still like damn near 30, it was just, I'm gonna push myself as hard as I can every second of every day. I was just like sprinting all the fucking time. But later, after, I blew my knee out and everything, I was a little more aware of that. I mean, I was still pushing myself too hard all the time, but I was a little more aware of that line. So I was able to do it a little healthier as I got older.
I'm going to ask you about a punch combination that I saw you doing on the pads. And it was basically like, if this is your orthodox and this is your backhand, you would throw the uppercut, you'd throw the uppercut, and then you would go straight into the two. So it'd be the backhand and go uppercut and then a straight two. Now, I have difficulty doing a combination punch with the same hand if they're both like power shots. I don't know if it's a footwork problem or if it's a speed thing. Like, I have difficulty figuring that out. I enjoy the, left, right, left, right. Like, I enjoy constantly going back to the other hand because that means that I can actually get my, I can load it up. So I want to ask you, how did you do this? And is this something that you used in the fights a lot?
I would often do a lot of same side stuff, doubling up, tripling up, two punches on the same side, followed by a kick on the same side. That's something that I just developed over time, but it's really just about balance, footwork, timing, and understanding how to keep that motor running. That's not always going left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. So what you got to think about is when you start, everything is very simple in that sense. Like, I can go from left to right, left to right. My body and brain understand how to do that. As you progress, you want to keep developing those levels. So I always talk about in the beginning, we're like a switch. We're either on or we're off, and there's no in between. I'm either not throwing something or I'm throwing it, and then I'm bringing it back. And that's it. One and two. As you develop, you start to turn more into a dial mentality where you're starting to add little points in there that you can differentiate speed, timing, power, distance. But it all needs to start at that very simple, basic base. Don't try to overcomplicate it and think, oh, I can't do that shit. Well, there's so many pieces that you need to develop in order to be able to do that. It's not just a matter of stick your hand out and bring it back. there's that timing, there's that rhythm. That's why footwork is so important and balance is so important to be able to maintain that motor that's not always 50-50 back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the easiest way to learn it is to slow everything down as much as humanly possible. You know, and don't think about power, don't think about speed. Just think about being smooth and slow in that moment. Once you can be smooth and slow, you can start to add a little more weight to things. You can add more power, you can add more speed. But if you can't do it as if you were underwater, you're not going to be able to do it harder. We get this misconception that we can only do things when we do them fast. Like, yeah, because you're hitting something and I guess that's okay. But in comparison to what that could be, you have to slow everything down. The more you can put things in slow motion, the more you can understand them, the more you can self-coach because you can read and feel your body and see how things work as opposed to always having to have that external person giving you feedback about what's right and what's wrong. You got to go slow. You should be able to hold every single position and be able to hold weight. Like if you're in a wave pool or something where everything's moving, you should be able to hold that balance. We tend to throw that out the fucking window because we want to hit something and we're just trying to get there as soon as possible. When it's really, you got to understand that base. The base is what's important and build on top of that. The hit is the end of this base. Right, it's the end of this long chain of things that need to be done correctly. And the more you do those things correctly, the less you got to think about the hit itself. It's going to happen. Same thing with sweeps or techniques like that. You don't train the end. You train the beginning, know how to get there, know what it's supposed to look like, and you got to work your way up to that final point. And that's all this is stuff you can work on all damn day with anybody that's in front of you by yourself. Your base, your balance, your rhythm, your movement, your flexibility, your cardio, your conditioning, those kinds of factors. The more you can work on those things, the better you're going to be. And everybody has to do them, but we get so fixated on that. Everybody's in a rush to the top. Everybody wants to be champ. Everybody wants to be in the spotlight. Everybody wants to be technically good. Everybody wants to be fast and powerful, but nobody wants to put in the work. So you see a lot of people get rushed to the top and they're gone just as quickly because they didn't develop the skills necessary. You're starting out as a baby, then you're going to kindergarten, then you're going to middle school, high school, college. You can't skip to the end because once you're at the end, you can't go back. You can't go back to the beginning of this game. So don't be in a rush to fucking get there. Develop, develop, develop. Once you develop correctly, you'll be able to stay there longer because you did it right. See what I'm saying? So don't get distracted by that external factor. That should be a driving force, but there's no rush to the top. You have to take those steps if you want to get there in the right way and be able to maintain that and do something once you get to this place. Like, oh, now you're in the spotlight. Now you can show the world what you are. You got shit, jack shit to show them because you suck. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean because somebody came on the show and they said to me, they're like, do you want to fight? And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, I just do this for fun, right? And then they're like, what you need to do is you need to book a fight at the end of the year and just go and do it. And I was like, no. I was like, I would want to, if I were to do that, I would want to train as much as possible until I'm so confident in myself that I understand all the fundamentals. And then I would even think about doing it. I wouldn't even do it. I would think about it, right? And they kind of said to me, like, oh, nah, just figure it out as you go. And I just think that's the wrong way to go about it. I think too many people do that. And that's why you see these amateur careers where people lose so many times on the skid, and then in their professional career, then they figure it out. I just feel like people need to be more patient.
Yeah, but what you got to realize is there's a balance there, right? It's like you can't learn how to fight in training. You have to fucking do it. You can only get so good in training. You can only do so much. You can only learn so much. You can only develop so many skills. You don't even know what that is. It's like learning how to swim without getting in the water. You don't know how to swim. You know how to replicate swimming. You understand?
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by you have to jump in the water to swim? Can you learn to swim?
No, like I'm talking about the sparring to the fighting. How different is it actually?
100%. 100% different. It's not the same at all.
Why?
Because there's external factors that aren't there in sparring. One, you're fighting someone you've probably never been across from before. People you're sparring with, you're comfortable with them, and you're in a comfortable place. Even if it's a gym you don't belong to, you're still in a relatively comfortable, safe enough place. Not in a place where someone might literally be trying to fucking kill you in front of all kinds of people you know, strangers, people that want to see you fail, yourself having all of your doubts that you have no idea about until you have that spotlight on your face and everyone's looking at you to see if you're going to collapse or not. It's not anywhere close to the same thing. You understand? It's like the difference between driving on a road and driving in a video game. You can practice stuff and you can learn and develop, but until you know what it's like to be in there, you can't really develop the way that you should. So it is important to dive right in there and do it so you understand what it is. Now, how long it takes you to get back in there again, yeah, you shouldn't just start fighting and be like, oh, I'm going to just fight all the fucking time and that's how I'm going to develop. You want to develop to a certain point to where you kind of understand things, but eventually you have to jump off the cliff. You cannot slowly walk off the cliff. You understand? You can't take the stairs. You have to dive off it. Eventually, you have to dive off it. You can train for 20 years, and it's still going to be just as far to the bottom of that cliff when you jump off. You're not going to be better than you really think. Intuitively, we think that would work. It doesn't, though, because it is a completely different thing.
Have you seen that where somebody has waited for so long and then they perform like shit?
Yeah, I've seen that, and I've seen so many people who were great in the gym, amazing, and when they got in the ring, they folded. Because you're so used to doing so well and being so good and being so talented, then you go out there and see what it's really like to fight. And most of them never fought again because their ego couldn't get out of its own way. You have to go through that failure. You have to go out there and lose. Eventually, it's going to happen. You're going to get hurt. You're going to lose. You're going to look like shit. And you need to take that back and develop. And regardless of whether you win, you lose, or it's a draw, all that is information to give yourself. And are you going to use this to get better, or are you going to use this to get worse or quit? And that's all it is. But you have to take that jump. If this is something you inevitably want to do, you just got to do it. You got to jump off the cliff, man, and see what it's like to be in the water, and then you can go from there.
Would you consider yourself an empathetic person?
Yeah. I'm an understanding person. But
I took that out of the intro. I took that out of the intro. I wrote in the intro, out of your accomplishments, I wrote at the very bottom, I wrote, he is a very understanding person. And I took that off because I was like, well, I'm talking about his Muay Thai accomplishments. Why would I add that in? So do you think I should have left that in?
Yeah, why not?
Tell me more about that.
I think from digging myself out of the gutter, I understand what it's like to be in the gutter. I understand what it's like to be weak. I understand what it's like to fail. I understand what it's like to have loss. I understand what all those things are. So just because I'm where I'm at now and I did the things that I did, it doesn't mean I'm still not that same person that was back there. I still have all that inside of me. I still feel all that. And I think because of that, I understand other people's fears and doubts and pains, even if they're different situations, it's the same emotions, even if we don't understand the details of it. We all feel that stuff, you know, and that's something we can all relate to. So, I understand it, and I see it very clearly.
Do you meditate on this?
Do I meditate on it specifically? No. I would say I meditate a lot, but I find it to be more of just a way of thinking and being than not always like a thing I'm practicing continually, like sitting down in a room and being quiet. Although I do that as well, but I think it's more of like a maintenance meditation where I'm always on the, and like I try to maintain like a meditative state where I'm calm and clear, and I can go from there as opposed to being stuck in a emotional response.
How do you meditate?
I do some breathing exercises. I got introduced to breath work a couple of years back. I'll go to this really cool, their Instagram is Breathe Degrees. And while they were developing the foundation of what they were going to do, their business, basically, I got to go and do one of their trial runs where they're still trying to work out the bugs and see what people liked, what they didn't. So I got to go to that, and it was just one of the coolest experiences I've ever had, most impactful, the power of breath work. And it was really cool. And I've been doing that ever since. I try to do it once a week if I can.
Do you stay relaxed?
Like all the time?
Well, you seem pretty relaxed.
Yeah, I am pretty relaxed. I've always been this way. My family is not very relaxed. So from being a child, I was able to see that and not want to be that way. So I think I learned how to relax very early on and be calm, and that just kind of became the way I was. But then through fighting and things like that, I developed it a lot further into more of a philosophical approach to it than just I'm just a calm person, calm, quiet person.
What does the name Jason Andrada mean to you?
Jason Andrada is a knucklehead. one of my favorite people in the world, especially in the fight community. He, coming up with him, we both lived in the gym together, not together, but like in different rooms. But we both kind of like went through that grind of living in a gym and going to all these fights, and kind of came up at the same time. He was a little after I had started, but we still went through that whole process together. And he's such a fun person. He's such a unique individual, crazy as hell. And he was one of those fighters. He's just like tough, but worked really, really, really hard, not technically or gifted in that kind of aspect, you know, but he was just, he was his own person. He had his own style. He had his own way of doing things. And he really was able to lean into that well, and he was able to do a lot. Unfortunately, his food habits really shortened his career, but you know, he knows how I feel about that.
Let me ask you about something that you wrote. You wrote that freedom is the only worthy goal in life. I want to ask you, people equate, you know, material wealth or, you know, money to freedom. Now, what do you think freedom is for yourself?
What is freedom? Freedom to me is being able to know who you are and be honest about who you are, not just to the external, but to yourself. having the freedom to accept those things and know that you can develop and work on them if they are something that you might not necessarily like, but you have to own it. You have to own who you are. And I think the things that enslave people are external things. Yes, money certainly brings you a lot of freedom, but you can get lost in it just like you can in anything else. Health gives you a lot of freedom, but you can get lost in that too. And that goes back to the duality of life. Everything has a balance. Everything has a good and a bad. You take the best thing in the world to an extreme, and it will be a negative. So you have to understand that. And that's how often so many terrible things happen in this world, because we feel justified and right in what we're doing. Because that might be accurate. You might be justified and right. But to what extent are you justified and right? Is it just because you think you're right? Or the world thinks you're right? Who gets to decide what that is? And every good thing can come with a bad thing very, very easily. And the more mindful we can be about that, the more balanced we can be, particularly when we feel that we're right. That is one of the most detrimental things in the world, feeling justified in your rightness, in your righteousness, when it's everything's a lot more complex than that. So try to remember the complexity of life, and there's a spectrum and a balance to all things.
I saw your cartwheel kick. You said that it wasn't a cartwheel at all. So can you explain this to me?
Well, my foot doesn't come off the ground, so it's not a cartwheel. A cartwheel, you got to pop up on your hands. So it looks like a cartwheel. But my foot doesn't ever come off the ground. There's a name for it. It's some kind of move they do in, I think it's ballet or some kind of dancing, where they do that inverted cartwheel motion, but your leg stays on the ground. I just don't know what it is. And I didn't intend to do it that way. I was actually practicing Sanchez cartwheel kick in training. And then I realized that if you keep your foot down, you can really pull a lot of leverage and weight into it. And you have a lot more control, and you don't end up on your fucking ass after you throw it all the time. So, yeah, that's how I developed that and figured out how to do it.
When I'm sparring, I really heavily rely on parrying the jabs with my backhand. I feel comfortable doing this. I don't know how to slip yet, nor do I know how to kind of angle off. I don't really know how to do that. So did you usually parry the jabs, or what did you do with that? I know that it's a case by case thing, but like, what can you say to me that will help me?
What you want to do is you want to develop all three or all different forms of defense individually. Work your parries, work your slips, work your hard block defense. Work your movement. Everything needs to have your legs incorporated into it, though. So even when you're parrying, you need to balance and use your footwork. Even when you're absorbing shots, you still need to balance and differentiate your weight distribution. So trying to develop those things individually, and develop them in a very simple, safe way. And then just as I was saying before about like doubling up that right hand, start with it the simplest way and develop it further and further and out farther and more complex ways, and have people throwing at you with greater and greater speed and power. But you don't try to just develop it with someone that's really trying to hit you, because you're trying to figure out this thing you don't understand while someone's trying to hurt you. So that's what makes it really tough. So you want to find that balance of a little bit of realism, but safety and to where you can play around in it. And that's what the Thais do so well with their place barring, with their without any gear on. That's what that allows you to develop. You get to practice all of these things you wouldn't normally necessarily do if someone was really hitting you. You know, there's plenty of stuff we all want to work on, but how are you going to work on it when someone's really trying to hurt you? Or is really hurting you, or they, in the very least, threatening that. You're going to go to the things you do well. We always develop the things we do well because that's what we're comfortable with. But the people that truly develop are the ones that are able to go outside their comfort zones and figure out how to incorporate more skills into their arsenal, whether that be striking, footwork, balance, training. All those factors come into play. And the more you can take that mindset into this art and every other art that you do, the more you're going to develop, and the more you're going to develop in a healthy way when you're getting hit in the head.
How do you land good body shots? I feel like when I was sparring, I was trying to get body shots off and my jab to the body was working, but everything else, the lead hook or the rear hook, I felt like when I was dipping my head down, either the uppercut, they would pull the uppercut and say, like, look, like, I could have gone that, or a knee, because I would have, you know, like, dipped my head too far. I feel like I'm just dipping my body in weird angles, ineffectively.
Yeah. I mean, so much of that is balance, timing, and rhythm more than anything else. The easiest way to practice is to, like, almost like you're slapping people or you're just touching them, because once you can touch them safely, then you can start to tighten that up and develop it and try to actually hit them. But you're trying to hit somebody with something effective, right? And you don't understand the timing, the balance, the distance of it all, where your threats are, where your openings are, and how to minimize those factors, and then what to do if those factors happen. So you see how many elements there are to this game. You can't just do it because you want to hit somebody in the body. So try to think, how can I incorporate this in a live situation? Do your normal thing and just, like, look to touch with it. And then you don't even necessarily have to touch the body. Like, first I just want to touch close to that, right? And that's what I was talking about earlier with, like, Eddie's game. You're figuring out that distance. I'm throwing things, I don't care if they land or not, I'm going to throw it in a way to where even if I miss, I'm still defensively sound and I'm still taking in information. I don't have to touch you to see where you're at. I have to touch this dead space. And the more I know this dead space, the more I can touch what's at the end of this dead space, which is you. But we don't play around in that dead space at all. And that's what you want to, that's how you can develop these skills on your own and safely, because you don't have to practice the end of the line, right? You don't have to sweep somebody on their head to learn how to sweep somebody on their head. You have to learn how to see the kick. You have to learn how to catch the kick, read the kick, how to adjust the kick, how to drive into the kick, how to get to the point of hitting the point on them that is going to get the sweep. We think we're just going to get the sweep or the end result, the strike, the move that we're doing. You can't do that. That's not how shit works. You learn through failure. You have to fail constantly. And the more you can do it in a safe way where you don't have to go 100% of a failure, I'm just failing to not get to the end of this line, but I'm getting closer and closer and closer and closer and closer. In all that time, you're developing all the base that's necessary to get to the end of that line. So when you get to the end of that line, you're able to do it effectively and repetitively.
Which loss do you think bothers you?
Bothers me? None of them. Now, to say, you know, looking back, if there's one I could redo, right, it doesn't bother me. Like, I don't care now. It's all part of one story to me, not just this individual moment. So that's what perspective gives us all, to be able to see that. But my fight with Sakadow is the one, it was always the one that I would have wanted to redo, just because there was a lot of factors that happened that I could have adjusted. Not even the fight. It had nothing to do with the fight. I mean, there's factors in there, of course, too, as well, but a few external factors that I know that I could have adjusted and would have helped. Not to say that I would have came out with a win because of it, or even that the fight would have been differently, but I would have known that those things weren't the ones that were holding me back.
Final question. for today is, can you tell the people why they should never stop moving?
Yeah, because you die when you stop moving. Everything dies when it stops moving. You have to stay in this constant state of flux, that back and forth, that black and white that we talk about. You don't want to be on one side of that or the other. You want to be in motion and be able to adjust that. And the more you stay in motion, the more you can adjust your motion within that spectrum that you're on. When you stop moving, it's so hard to get moving again. So you're only going to get worse from that point, right? Once you stop something, that's your new level. And then you just continually break down and down and down. And that's the thing I think that ages people more than anything. They take in this factor, oh, I'm getting older. That means that, oh, it's just harder for me now, so I don't have to move because it's difficult. And all that to me means is you only do things when they're easy. So when you're young, it's easy. You don't have soreness or hurt, and it's just like you want to go do it. And then the older you get, it's not that easy anymore. So that's why you don't do it, because it's not easy anymore. It's not going to get any easier. It's only going to get harder. Life only gets harder as it goes farther. It doesn't get easier. Certain factors get easier, certainly. But the older you get, the more you're breaking down, the less things you're going to be able to do. That's why it's so important to be in the moment, because you're never going to get this moment back. It's never going to happen again. Hopefully these things continue to happen, but the longer you live, the more you lose that time. And if we could all see what that time is, we'd have a much different perspective. All of our clocks are ticking above our heads. We don't know what they are. We can't see them. But what you need to know is each second, you're one second closer to not being here anymore. So appreciate the moments that you have. Keep moving. Don't stop just because it's hard. Don't ever give up. Don't stop.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Kevin, for coming on the show again. Is there anything you want to say to the fans as we wrap up the podcast?
Don't stop moving.
Follow Kevin Ross on Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye-bye.